That was way crazy fun. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm really overjoyed to see that we are here in community. And that, can you just feel the love this morning? It was like there was so much chatting going on and laughter, and it makes my heart so full. And it actually, you know, helps us see each other at a different level. So before I get into the meat and the fun stuff, I want to say that there's a lot going on in the world, and there are a lot of people are quite concerned, and we're making a couple of changes in like the way that we're going to be doing this elbow bump. If you don't want to hug, you can still hug, but if you don't want to hug, you just extend your elbow, and then people will know you don't want to hug, and then that's a cool way for us to do that. And then somebody pointed out to me that because I like music and dance so much, and that's kind of what my theme is today, that we could then end up doing the chicken dance. Oh, I know. I would have people join me. Somebody would dance with me, Fred. It may not. Somebody just behind you raised her hand. I would not be doing it a solo act. So, anyhow, I want us to have fun. I want us to be sensible. And I want us to really, you know, be courageous at looking at the way sometimes things scare us. And then I want us to use principle to get back into love and away from fear. So I have all kinds of fun ways to do that. But I thought, first of all, you needed a special prayer right now from me. So I wrote a spiritual mind treatment and affirmative prayer. And I stuffed it myself in your programs. And it's the purpose of the prayer is to rise above conditions. And so everything you hear reported in the news is a condition. Everything that goes a little sideways in your life that stirs you in an unpleasant way, it's a condition. Conditions come and conditions go. And this teaching is so anchored in the how to move through all of that stuff. So I wrote you a prayer. And if you want to read it every day or anytime you notice a little shiver or something, let it be somebody else's shiver and you get yourself grounded back in spiritual truth again. Call a practitioner if you need to. In addition to that, Dr. Edward Villune, who is now the leader of Centers for Spiritual Living, created a press release that was circulated on Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm not sure when, and he put some really fabulous info. I have made several copies available at Home Space as well as in our little prayer altar corner over there. And he talks not only about the information from the CDC, but then he gives you a list of places you can go on the internet to get encouragement. So take one of those, and I'll make sure we have them out until all of this blows over, because there's just good wisdom in all of it. Now, one of the things that, see, Kathy, are you ready to help me here? One of the things the CDC has said is that we should wash our hands, and we should wash our hands a little longer. And I read somewhere that if you sing Happy Birthday, the Happy Birthday song, while you're washing your hands, it will help you extend. You know, you have to keep washing until the song is over. And I thought, well, that's boring. Surely we can do something a little better. And so I thought of all these great Karen Drucker chants, because they're short and they're easy. And many of you are very familiar with them already. And so I asked Kathy to give us just a brief chorus of a song she's done for us before. And so she's going to sing it twice through, and then Kathy, how about on that? Well, she's going to sing it once. On the second time, we're going to join in, because I think you're going to learn it really quickly, and it's easy. This is a wash your hands song.
And I think you guys know it already. I send my love over the mountains. I send my love over the sea. I send my love into the heavens, and it returns to me.
Hey, everybody, this
time. I send my love over the mountains. I send my love over the sea. I send my love into into the heavens.
Yes.
And it returns to me.
Wonderful. Thank you, Bradford. Isn't that perfect? Isn't that a perfect way to wash your hands? You're sending love. You're not afraid. You're not doing battle with germs or anything. You're sending your love. You're sending your love. And if we can change that vibration in the way we approach this in that really simple manner, I think we're going to see really incredible things happen from the point of consciousness, which is what this is all about. So my message this morning, which was all outlined weeks ago without any understanding of the day and what would be going on in the world when I presented this message. The title of it is The Motion of Life. And I had this idea that it's so useful to look at that ongoingness of life, that life is always moving and there's this divine motion and there's this perfect current of life. And it seems to me that the spiritual path is intended, no matter where you study what religious tradition, it's intended to get us back into that groove. And so I immediately had this idea that it's like music, that when I stand and make a conscious decision to recognize the presence of God in my life, that something stirs inside of me. In the same way that something musical and wonderful that speaks to me personally, in the same way that I get stirred from that. And you know why? Because it is the motion of life. It is that divinity that is awakened within us and stirs. And when you awaken that divinity within us, your immune system gets this tremendous boost from that love and that recognition and that gorgeous quote that Judy Baker used, where Holmes said, "We can think our illnesses away," you know? So I found this quote that's really a fabulous quote from the book A New Design for Living by Dr. Ernest Holmes, who, by the way, if you're visiting for the first time, is the founder of this philosophy, this teaching, filled with great spiritual wisdom. And here's the quote that really excited me for presenting this material. He said, "If it is true that it is done unto us according to our belief," now let me just pause for a moment. Anytime we start a sentence with those words, "if it is true," then as soon as I pause, you have to go, "and it is." Okay. "If it is true that it is done unto us as according to our belief, then it becomes apparent that there must be something," capital S, "there must be something that does something according to our belief. But this something is limited in its doing according to the way we think. It is unlimited, but in according to the way that we think about it, it becomes now limited. And therefore," or he says, "hence, we are confronted with the necessity of enlarging our concepts and to thinking clearly." And that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to enlarge our concept and we're going to remind ourselves that we do know how to return to clear thinking, because life is just moving about. That's what it does. And we stabilize it only in our inner world, in our intention to be grounded and centered in the goodness of life. So, you know, gosh, I've been doing weekly talks for more than 20 years, and it's lovely to see the synchronicity that happens. But I said to a group of people last night, we had a gourmet for God experience at Reverend Clyde's house. It was all the sushi you could eat. Oh, my goodness. He had it catered. And he's such a good host. It was really wonderful. I probably ate more than I should have. It was fun and delicious. But I said last night when we were talking that in all the years of preparing messages to be delivered with this great authority of a especially that Sunday morning platform, I've never felt quite as excited about the message and the synchronicity of the message as I am today. So listen up, because there's something really important that I think is happening, and I think that it came together with this gorgeous, joyous musical theme in a way in which we can, we'll be able to reflect back on it later when we need it, and it'll stir some joy in our hearts. In fact, I write a short blog every week, and I sort sort of get you ready for the new, with what the upcoming talk is. And I wrote in my blog this week, it's time for us to get out on the dance floor of life and to find our groove, as together we learn the steps and we find the rhythm of something brand new. And so, what a great thing. But then I quoted myself because I liked what I wrote next. So me and Mark, we could hang out. I wrote, but the best part of dancing is remembering that we control the motion of the atoms in our own life. I know, right? Maybe Mark will put me in a book one day. Yeah. The most important thing, the best part of dancing is to remember that we control the motion of the atoms in our own life. So we are always doing that. We are always thinking first and controlling the direction we'll move in, whether we are aware of it or not. And when we become conscious, then we find that we are doing things on purpose. So if I want to walk over there towards that door, I have a thought about it, and then my feet start moving. Isn't that a great thing? Think about it. If I'm at home and I want to get over here to church, I think about it, and then I go and I get in my car and I direct my car to drive me here to church. Right? It starts with a thought, and then we step into actually doing it. And you know, if I get scared by, if something startles me in life, then what happens is I think that scary thought, and my heart will start racing, and your blood pressure changes. Your body responds to, you know, whatever you're thinking. Our physical being follows the thought. So then if I look at the other idea, if I have a very sweet thought, if I remember holding one of my beautiful little grandbabies, then something shifts in my body in a positive way that releases endorphins, and I feel good. So if we would slow down and just notice how much we are really have some choice in how we experience our life and how we move through our experiences, we would never feel victimized by anything out there in the world. As I was putting this together, I kept thinking of that old quote. Somebody said it here in Papke Hall a couple weeks ago. Reminded me of this old quote I used to say all the time. Deepak Chopra said, you know, you have trillions of cells that are eavesdropping on your thoughts. Trillions of cells. I looked it up to validate that he really, you know, I wanted to just make sure he still really said that. 50 trillion is what he said. We have trillions of cells that are eavesdropping and responding to our thoughts. So, you know, there's just some wisdom in this gorgeous idea of there's a motion of life. I mean, we know that. We can see the clouds move across the sky. We can go out at the nighttime and we can look and sometimes we can spot a planet, and we can remember that there's this perfect order in the universe, this perfect order where everything knows how to move in perfect synchronicity with everything else. And when something goes wrong, it knows how to correct that. And so when we stand in that, when we notice that and we realize that that movement, that motion of life is true of the greatest things that happen in the universe that we can't even see, probably even imagine. And then if we go into that deep inner universe and we look in microscopically at the realms, if you just go deeper and deeper until you could see, until we learned that there's movement in the tiniest atom, we begin to see that that is how we evidence life. As long as there's still movement, there is still life. And so our thoughts are moving around. Your thoughts are moving around right now. Some of you are following me. Some of you have spurred off somewhere else, and you're still thinking about the planets and the universe. But it doesn't matter, because you're going to all get the message that you came here to get today. Where it becomes a matter of spiritual maturity, you might say, is that when we begin to intentionally choose and direct those thoughts, because we realize that every thought creates a bit of a trajectory, a direction that our life then follows or shoots into, you could say. so, you know, we're here to remember that there is a divine flow of life, a perfect, gorgeous, complete movement that is always that divinity. And it has a rhythm, just like a music. You know, it has a cadence to it. It has a way that it has this beauty. When we can find our way to step into that current, that divine movement, now we are being carried along with that music, with that beauty. That's where we see joy. That's where don't laugh, but that's where your green lights add up or your parking space bops out, because you're not driving around going, oh, I'll never find a place to park. It's that we make a different choice. We choose to believe that everything is possible, and we aren't looking for things to go wrong. We're looking for things to go right. So we start by proving this stuff to ourselves in little ways. We start by daring to create affirmative prayers to bring a better order into our lives, and suddenly we notice that there's this repercussion that is like ripples of truth are revealed to us, in that we suddenly were worried about a shortage of financial funds, perhaps, and unexpected income shows up. Right? And now we don't just go, oh, well, look how great this is. We go, wow, I get it. I see how life works. I get myself clear, and nothing blocks my good from coming to me. And that's how we heal. That's how we heal our relationships. We quit focusing on what we can't fix about the other person. We can't change how somebody else interprets a conversation we had. Thank you. Woo! Where you been? I missed you, baby. So we stand in what's possible, not in the story or the history or the way things used to be, because principle does not depend on a precedent. We are all, every day we make a choice, we are starting a new precedent. Yeah, I'm really excited about all of this. So I like to say, those of you who come all the time have heard me say, let's be the container, the vessel. You know, God's grace is always, the givingness of God never ceases to flow. And so let's be the vessel to receive. Let's get filled up with that grace. And there's not a little bit for you and a little bit for you. It's just pouring everywhere. And the size of the bucket you take out to catch it is how much you get to have. So we have to constantly be imagining, enlarging our concept, as he said earlier, and stepping into new possibilities. We don't resist. We don't fight conditions. We participate in this life, and we get to choose how we're going to show up. So we do that through attitude. And I would say, as I was thinking about it in relationship to music, it's like our ability to hear music. So first of all, I can put music on and never hear it. But I can put music on with an intention. You know my secret trick to getting my house clean quick? I put on the Gypsy Kings. Gypsy Kings, da-da-da-da, it works. Oh, man, you get moving really quick, and it makes me happy. It uplifts me. And I move through life with that sort of music. And sometimes while I'm cooking, I like to put on a little mellow jazz or something that gives me a rhythm to the movements of that creative act that happens in the kitchen. And so we're looking at this idea of relating that flow of life to this movement of music, and that the beauty and the feeling and the recognition of the presence of God is that same way that music can stir us. And I'm calling it a sacred indwelling cadence. Sacred indwelling cadence that is always there, but sometimes we gotta stop and listen. Right? And sometimes you have to stop. That's why I really promote meditation or sitting, having a sitting practice where you sit still and quiet and you are not thinking about anything, and then you notice what comes, because there's that's where the music is. So you listen, but more than that, it's about hearing. How do we hear the sacred? So I think there have always been people who have been intuitively, who get something about whether they're secular or spiritual, it doesn't matter. There have always been philosophers and saints and sages who have been the people that have written poetry and books and essays on that thing that we're talking about today. And one of the more modern sagey people that I wanted to bring your attention to today is Norman Cousins. So I was thinking about all this stuff in the news, and what would Norman Cousins have to say about that? Now, he's that guy that healed himself by laughing. So he's the guy that's famous for healing himself through laughter. So I looked up the details of the story of Norman Cousins, and you know what? I found out some really interesting things that we don't know about or are not commonly spoken about in terms of Norman Cousins. First of all, I didn't know he was Jewish. He was Jewish, but he wasn't heavily religious, but he loved he did have ritual. He brought the rituals of Judaism into his life and raising in the way that he raised his children as well. He was a journalist. He was a political activist. He was an advocate for world peace and a professor at UCLA. And he did indeed heal his own illness. And here's the story, the details of what happened. It was 1964, and he's a funny man, he's a humorist, he's definitely an optimist anyhow. Everywhere he went in the world, and the people that had contact with all said the same thing about him. 1964, he became ill. He became very ill. He had a very high fever, he had severe pain, and he was hospitalized when his legs became paralyzed, his back and his neck. So all he could move was his arms. They put him in the hospital. He's in great pain. He has this life-threatening disease diagnosed as degenerative collagen illness, and the prognosis was not good. They didn't have a lot of hope of him recovering. And here's what he said. Deep down inside, I knew I had a good chance of recovering. And then he said the most interesting thing. He said, I relished the idea of beating the odds. Isn't that a fresh approach? He said, I relished the idea of beating the odds. And so he did something really interesting. He's in a New York hospital, and he had a movie projector brought into his hospital room, and he watched reruns of Candid Camera. Now, he loved Candid Camera because he was a practical joke player. He's a guy who he would always, at April Fool's, they always knew who to look once they figured out it was just a joke. But he was so extreme that when he was working for the New York, name escapes me, newspaper, he was working for this New York Times or whatever, and he played a practical joke by having the headline of the paper changed to say, mass production of bras goes wrong, 3,500 ladies' bras were accidentally designed in rectangles instead of circles. Company perplexed as to what to do with all these bras. And then in the article it said, perhaps men could use them as ashtrays. And so he's just a funny jokester, you know, you get that idea. So he brings in he's watching Candid Camera, he's watching Marx Brothers movies over and over, and he sort of accidentally figured out that when he laughed, and he laughed in a real genuine laugh, and if he could keep himself laughing for 10 minutes, it gave him 2 hours of pain-free sleep. He said that his laughter was an anesthetic. We all have that. We all have that. And so he wrote a 6-page article that he submitted to the popular medical journal of the day. And it was so well received by the medical world that more than 5,000 physicians reached out to him and said, "You have to tell us more." So there was a lot of credibility in this article written by this man who was not necessarily very medical oriented, as you can see. And he went on to say in this article, he said, "We mustn't regard any of this as a substitute for competent medical attention. Please be wise about your own care," right? This is not a substitute for competent medical attention, but the doctor only does half the job. The other half is the patient's response to the illness. And he tied that in and he used the word responsibility. It is the way that we respond to the illness, to the diagnosis, to the headlines in the newspaper, all of it, not the bra part, but the scary stuff. The way we respond to that is our business. That's our responsibility. So what do you believe about illness? What do you believe about the flu? What do you believe about some of the stuff everybody's talking about? Did I not tell you last week you'd have an opportunity to think about what your own thoughts are this week? See, this stuff that we teach here, this spiritual principle and the spiritual practices that we teach in all our classes and talk about every Sunday, this stuff is not positive thinking. You know, it helps if we're positive thinkers, and you can learn to be a positive thinker if you apply the principle in your life. But that is not what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about paying attention. This is scientific stuff. I mean, the whole idea of God and your brain is a hot topic in the scientific community now. And so, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? What is your response to whatever condition shows up in your life? And you are 50% responsible for your own mending. So don't get in the way of that perfection, that wholeness within you that desires to be expressed as you. I remembered that Joel Osteen's mom was being treated for cancer, and he would say to her, "Mom, how are you feeling today?" And she would go, "I'm strong in the Lord and the power of his might." He said, it didn't matter. He'd go, "Mom, how you doing today?" "I'm strong in the Lord and the power of his might." And then she sailed through the illness, you know, back into wholeness. And so there's something up in all of this that is a really good example for us that calls us to listen to that deeper wisdom that we all have. Listen. Hear it. Think of it as music that you're trying to tune into and to hear. See, it helps when we know the steps to the dance. That's what our teaching is about, if I'm going to use it as a metaphor. We give you steps, you know, and it really helps if you know that stuff. And I think that when people dance and it's visible, you know, I mean, it's fun to dance, and you don't have to even be a good dancer to have fun on the dance floor. We proved that recently, right? Right? You just get out there and you have fun. But when you watch people that know how to do it, because they've gone and they've practiced and they learned the steps, it becomes beautiful. And then we can watch. You don't even have to dance. You can watch and you can have the experience of what it's like to dance. See, you have to open to that possibility. I want to prove it to you. Would you like me to prove it to you? Would you love it if I didn't dance? Yes. So we want to make it fun. There's something special about learning the steps and then using them. And I want you to think of this demonstration as a way it relates to our teaching. So I have some dancers that have volunteered to help me with the demonstration this morning. So I think we want to clear a couple things away first. Oh, we're just going to slide. Okay. Okay, so I would like to introduce our dancers, Evie and Ron. Please welcome. Wow, that was really fun. See, I want to do that. I mean, it's a lot of work to learn to do that, I think. And courageous. Was that not sort of courageous? I love that they came up and shared with us. Thank you so much. Boy, that was even better than I hoped for. Thank you, Bradfords, for like just spontaneously pulling that off. That was so awesome. Oh, so what does it feel like to do that? You know, how fun was that just to watch it? Where else in church do you see that? I love it when people say, I'm not really too open to organized religion, and I get to say, I know we're not that organized. We do whatever works, right? So it's a great metaphor for life. Norman Cousins, in that part where he said there's some responsibility on the part of the patient, he really believed that we could heal ourselves. And I want you to listen carefully to this quote that also came from the paper he wrote. What we mean when we talk about the patient's responsibility is that we, as individuals, have vast powers that we rarely use. It's important to avoid defeatism. And when it comes to illness, we must avoid a sense of panic and despair. Amen. These are words that were meant for this time. The synchronicity of this message and what's going on in the world is stunning to me as the person presenting these words. I think that this is such good advice that we can practice hearing the music. We can hum along. Notice we want to clap. We tap our foot. We don't even know we're doing it, right? And there's something really sweet about that. So so we want to let our bodies move to the beat of joy, to that goodness that is what I think is the music of life. And I want you to know that that music never ceases. I remember seeing a picture right after 9/11 of the devastation and this gorgeous sunset right behind it, a sky that was filled with life and potential and possibility and promise. So I want to close this morning with a little something I stumbled on regarding Dr. Ernest Holmes, who, as I said earlier, is the founder of this teaching. And this is a book that is a biography of his life, written primarily by his brother Fenwick. And in this book, I found the most extraordinary reading that I wanted to share with you this morning. In 1917... Holmes had discovered the work of Thomas Troward and had begun looking at applying the principles that Troward wrote about into sort of a methodology that would become what we now call religious science or the science of mind, this teaching. And in 1917, Fenwick was also a minister, and Holmes wasn't a minister yet, and Fenwick and Ernest, these two brothers, had been practicing what they were reading and learning about, and they had an aunt, Aunt Annie, who had a little cottage in Venice Beach, California. And people started coming because they wanted the brothers to practice prayer on them, because it looked like they were pretty successful, that you could bring an ailment or something to them, and that these two men could heal you. So now Ernest still thinks they're just sort of experimenting, but they come to realize that they had found something. They began to call it spiritual mind treatment, that there was a logical progression of the ways we can think about our relationship to the divine and then unify with that to recognize that we're not separate from all that glorious power that is greater than we are, but we can use it, we can tap into it, we can find our place in the dance steps and movement of healing and moving through conditions. And so they decided in 1917 to do something sort of organized, and they purchased a 3-story house in Long Beach, California, not far from Aunt Annie's. And they turned this house into a metaphysical sanitarium. It was a place where people who were ailing from some something could come and convalesce. Imagine that. It's this 3-story, you know, one of the long wraparound porch and then the tower at the top of the 3rd story. And they renovated it so that there were 18 beds. They could take 18 patients to stay in. As soon as they opened the doors, the beds were filled and the waiting list was so long that it would have taken forever to get everybody that wanted to be there in. In 1917, imagine that. And so what happened was, it was 1917, so there were a lot of soldiers returning from World War I who were suffering from what at the time they called shell shock. There also were physical ailments from the war. There was a lot of paralysis from different injuries. And so they found that they had a lot of soldiers that were treated in their metaphysical sanitarium. And they found that they were quite successful in helping them heal. And then, in 1918, the great influenza epidemic that they called the Spanish flu happened. Listen to this paragraph regarding that time. The work of our Metaphysical Institute went on during the great influenza epidemic in the fall of 1918. It took hundreds of lives in California. Schools and theaters and churches were closed, and people went about the streets with gauze masks, attempting to shut out the germs or the virus and to escape contagion. But we went about our business as usual. And although we treated many, many people who came to us, many who telephoned us for help, we did not have a single failure. these are little known facts that we don't know, that are not predominantly given to us. And we're walking through a time where we have a condition that could frighten us. But I love, he said, we went about our business as usual. Let's be really clear here. The only treatment they offered was spiritual mind treatment. This was not a medical facility, right? They did prayer, and they did affirmative prayer, and they were 100% successful. They came to this conclusion. After time had passed, Ernest then said, he looked at both working with the soldiers and then working with the people who were experiencing the effect of the influenza. And he realized, he said, it seemed that when people believed that life was pitted against them, nothing could turn out right, and they were right. They believed when you take an illness and it frightens you and you believe you are doomed, you will be right. But once they opened to the possibility of healing, they were healed. These are his words. He's reporting what happened in those years. See, the nature of life is motion. It's movement. It's dance. There's music in there. There's beauty and there's joy if we just look for it. So if we make choices right now in the spring of 2020, let us make choices and choose to hear the music, to feel the divine, sacred motion of life within us, to stand in that sacred indwelling cadence and move with it so that we are not against it. We move in the flow of life because it is the dance that brings us joy. And therefore, we do not have to ever be steadfast against evil of any form, because life is not pitted against us. We instead will be steadfast for good. Will you join me? Oh, come on. Will you join me? I want to know we're all in this together and that there's a way we move through this and there can be joy in life and dance. And so I want to anchor all of these ideas. I just want to anchor them in those same powerful words of prayer that Fenwick and Ernest used so long ago. So if the practitioners, ministers, if you would just stand and circle this room and just let all your confidence and conviction wash over of this entire community. Take a breath. A lot has been said this morning. There's a lot of movement going on in the world. And yet we can take this glorious time and sit in this sanctuary and just breathe. Just feel the love of God surrounding you, permeating each individual. And so I simply know that right where we are, God is. That there is no place where God is missing or limited or constricted in any way. That the infinite intelligence of all the universe is right here, right now. In this very room, I feel the love of God within me, and I know that it is that glorious indwelling presence, that intelligence, that wisdom of our bodies that responds to anything that looks out of order. That it is the desire of this perfect life itself to restore every cell of our body to that perfection, that natural, glorious movement, that beautiful flow of life, the circulation of blood and air and moving through our being. We just feel it enlivened activated by the words of this prayer, expressing that divine DNA, the DNA of God itself. For we are created in the image and the likeness of the Creator. It could be no other way. And so I feel this way that we listen. We rest in the beauty and potential of this day. And we know that as we fill ourselves with this grace of God, this givingness, this activity of life itself, and become more aware, and we become clear, and we even allow that expansion of our consciousness to enlarge, that we're doing good work in the world, not just for ourselves, not just for our families, but that there is this glorious ripple effect, that as we walk our lives and put one foot in front of the other, each step, a holy step in the name of God, that we bring this healing light, we bring love, we bring this dynamic healing energy that allows us to radiate this truth that we can stand in, this conviction that we feel as our faith deepens and stretches and increases in so many ways. And when we are afraid, we take a breath again and remember that when we are afraid, we are trusting in our own strength, and there is something so much greater than we are alone. There is this power and this presence, and indeed it is wiser and greater and more powerful than anything we have yet to imagine. And so we align to that. We find our place in that movement, that current, that divine activity of life. And we recognize that we are safe, and we are guarded, and we are guided, and we are directed, and we move exactly in that perfect order, and we live in that divine synchronicity because we hear this sacred cadence. So I rejoice in the power of the spoken word of prayer. I rejoice in knowing that the presence of God is always that shining light. I rejoice in knowing that we are healed simply by opening ourselves to that movement and activity of life within us even now. And that this glorious acceptance of good ripples out in every direction. We stand witness of healing in our relationships, in our finances, in our physical bodies, in our friendships, and in our spiritual community. I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. Feel that gratitude moving within me. And with great joy and tremendous confidence, I release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always responds, yes, my child, yes, it is done. We release these words, we allow them to be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.